Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hello from Complex to Queens listeners. I'm Ken Lavin. I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos, and this is this week's episode of From Complex to Queens. How you doing, Lucas?
I'm okay. I'm very tired. Hopefully I can stay conscious for the next hour.
Yeah, that would be ideal. But we'll see.
No promises.
Okay. So for promote, extend, trade, I got like super lazy with it. And just said, you know, the big league roster has a couple of, like, really bad weaknesses. I don't know about you, but watching Wilson Ramos catch is among the more frustrating things.
Yeah, it's not great, Bob.
So that and also, you know, like, second base or a corner outfield spot are also kind of a weakness. Also, just generally the bench.
Yeah, can we get Aaron Altherr off the team, please?
Yeah, I don't understand why he's still here. Like, he's been about as bad as you could possibly be.
It's truly impressive.
Yep. So, I guess promote, extend, trade, Rene Rivera, Dilson Herrera, or Ruben Tejada. And if you want to swap Rene Rivera out for, like, anybody, that's fine.
Here's the thing. At least Ramos is hitting.
Like, yeah, true.
And I don't really, like, I know Rene Rivera has 23 home runs in AAA because AAA offensive numbers are insane this year.
The ball is juiced.
Yeah, it's, like, juiced, and then it's all the quad A pitchers who give up too many home runs in the first place.
Yeah,
so
it's basically, you know, the entire pitching population are guys who, yeah.
Rene Rivera is basically just Thomas Nito.
I think he might be a little better, but I think he's the pretty obvious trade here.
Yeah, I'm trading Rene Rivera. And then it's a question of Dilson or Ruben. I want to promote both of them. Here's the problem. Like, Dilson might be able to play the outfield. I don't know that Tejada ever has or could.
Yeah, true.
So I'm probably, like, if you could probably dump Altherr and bring up Herrera.
Yeah, that's a one for one.
Whereas for Ruben, you probably have to dump, I don't know, Guillorme, who at least can play defense.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't have a problem with either, but that's less concerning to me than Altherr. So I guess I'm extending Herrera, which in this case means I want to promote him more, and then promoting Tejada.
Yeah, so I agree, and my reasoning is that Herrera is much younger, so
you
probably want his future as opposed to Tejada, who, you know, could, I guess, fill an immediate hole. You know, you could push. He's basically duplicative of Panic, I think. But yeah, I think that's pretty much the only answer.
I think the real answer is we want both of them on this roster.
Because
Guillorme and Herrera, and Altherr.
Yeah, your first home run, big home run the other day, notwithstanding, you don't really want Louis Guillorme up with the game on the line, you know?
No. That was absurd. Like, I was pretty sure that ball was going to die on the warning track, and it just kept going. So
I legit never thought we'd see it. Like, I know he has, like, sneaky raw and stuff, but he's just, like, been so overmatched in the big leagues so far.
Yeah.
I could not be happier.
Yeah. I mean, I really like Louis Guillorme. I have this, like, cognitive dissonance where I recognize that defense isn't as important as offense, but I love baseball defense. I think it makes the best highlights in any sport. And Yorme is such a fantastic defender to watch.
He's legitimately like a wizard. He does things. Yeah. You're just like, what?
Yeah, it's insane. But unfortunately,
he can't hit enough for it to play, right. You know, to let the defense really.
And the rest of this team doesn't have the offensive bench depth to cover for that. Right. Like if you had like at least two other good hitters on the bench, you could live with a guy who's just a black hole. But they don't have that.
Yep.
They have two black holes, arguably three.
Yep. All right.
Fix the bench next year so we can roster Guillaume.
that would be cool. If, you know, we weren't seeing like an endless cavalcade of like minor league MITs.
You aren't excited for Danny Echeverria and
is he still in the organization since they DFA'd him?
He's probably gone. We're going to get Rajay Davis, for September, I imagine.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised if they called up Alcantara. What's the new roster rule? Does that go into effect this year?
I have no idea. I could not tell you. I think it's like 28. Maybe you only get two extra spots, but Alcantara would make sense. I don't think Davis or Alcantara are actually good.
No. The only thing is, you know, Alcantara can run a little bit.
Yeah, which is nice. And I think Davis can too, even though he's 310.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, do some things, Mets.
Yep.
Shuffle the edges of the roster. They don't do that enough.
You know who largely didn't do many things? The Mets minor league affiliates in the last week.
It was not the best.
So I guess we'll do the records and everything now. The Syracuse Mets went 3-3 this week. They're currently 59-59 on the season and are in fourth place in the International League North Division. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies went 2-4 this past week. They're now 59-57 on the year, 24-28 in the second half, which is good for fourth in the Eastern League Eastern Division. The St. Lucie Mets actually had a really good week. They went 6-1. They're now 66-51 on the year, 34-17 in the second half, which second place in the Florida State League North Division. And I really don't understand why.
I could not tell that roster.
Looking at that roster, like nothing really jumps out at me as like, no. Okay, well that guy, you know, would naturally be destroying this league.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Where's that gif of Kronk with the map? It doesn't make sense.
I don't get it. But Columbia Fireflies went 6-1 this week. They're now 46-68 on the year and 22-26 in the second half, which is fifth place in the South Atlantic League Southern Division. The Brooklyn Cyclones went 4-2. They're now 30-23 on the year, which is good for second in the New York Penn League McNamara Division. The Kingsport Mets went 4-4 this week. They're now 24-27 on the year, which is fourth place in the Appalachian League West Division. And the GCL Mets went 3-4. They're now 21-17 on the season, which is tied for first in the GCL East Division with the GCL Marlins. So we got good weeks out of St. Lucie and Columbia a little bit.
Columbia, the roster we all thought would be good, still.
Yeah.
Meh.
Ronnie Mauricio hit just like a wild home run.
I must admit, I was out of town for a couple of days.
Let me see if I could find it. He basically, it was like a pitch that was maybe like 3 inches off the plate inside, and he somehow yanked it into the seats.
Great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's actually really encouraging because I want to see more power from him. I also want to see more plate discipline from him, so maybe not great that that's what he's trying to do with that pitch, but the fact that he was able to do it is
impressive. The bat-to-ball is pretty great. Vientos also hit, which is like a monstrous home run. I can't find it. I'll send it to you later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Vientos' raw is still not in question. It's just, is he going to be able to actually
is he going to get enough of it into games where, you know,
he's going to hit some monster dongs.
Strike out a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You saw Brooklyn a couple times. Do you have any quick thoughts on them?
Today. It's a boring roster, man.
Really?
Yeah, I'm hoping to see Otanya's on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
But beside him, I don't know, Luke Ritter I like a little bit. Just like a quick stroke, and he, you know. Maybe I've caught him on just 2 days where he got some pop into the game, but it's a really like quick swing. You know, I don't know.
Not impressed with Mangum.
He's really, honestly, he reminds me a lot of Louis Guillorme as a hitter, especially in the lower minors when he was just opposite field heavy, trying to poke the ball the other way. He's really like a cut and slash guy. I don't really get where, unless he just like bulks up, where the power is going to come from,
mm-hmm.
or where like any power is going to come from. That being said, he's a good defender. He's really fast. And you know, maybe they work on his approach a little bit.
Seems like you'd have to totally rework his swing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's as simple as like just, you know, him learning to pull more. I don't know if the swing is specifically geared to just dump the ball the other way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I just know that that's how the majority of his at-bats that I've seen have ended.
I mean, it sounds very much like a metal bat swing. Just, yeah. I'm going to keep pinging things the other way.
Yeah. So, but he's a good athlete. Who knows? What's the other one? My buddy Joe Gennord is looking like a guy who's not going to make it to Double A.
Shocking that.
He did hit a really impressive home run today.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Yeah. I think I asked Jarrett. Like, I think one out of how many tries gets you like CJ Cron? He's like, oh yeah, like 50.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So who knows? He's striking out a lot though.
Yeah. I always am interested to see the second season numbers before I sound the death knell, because I don't know how tired these guys are or whatever else, but yeah, not looking the best.
Yep. I like Kenny Taylor a little bit too. He's just kind of quick and. Same, kind of similar to Mangum, but I think he has a lot more pop.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Not like a lot, but like a lot more. So, I don't know. It's kind of a
boring roster. But Brooklyn must win, so we're going to draft.
Exactly, Brooklyn must win.
30 college guys who aren't actually that good.
Yep. All right. You want to move on to players of the week?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So our hitter of the week is Rene Rivera. Unsurprisingly, given that he hit 3 home runs, I forget which day this week, but I think Thursday he hit 3 home runs for Syracuse. He hit 500, 522, 1273 with 11 hits, 2 doubles, 5 home runs, 1 walk, and 3 strikeouts in 23 plate appearances.
All right. That's pretty good.
That's a lot of extra base hits in just 20 plate appearances.
It's like a 700 slugging or a 700 ISO. I think that'll play. Ball not juiced, by the way. Ball is the same. Thanks, MLB.
He now has 23 home runs on the season.
I mean, can you imagine a PCL team? Because I occasionally see, like, I don't know, that dude from Baseball America, J.J. Cooper, whatever, tweeting about the PCL stats with the juice ball, and it's just horrific. Can you imagine if we still had an affiliate in Vegas this year?
Those poor, poor pitchers.
Like what do you do? What are you supposed to... It doesn't matter what you throw. It's going to leave the yard. I think it's like 2 pitchers have an ERA under 4 or something like that. This average staff ERA is in the 6s. It's absurd. It's just like the
That's the only way to describe it. It's like whatever the next evolution of baseball is, that's just like robots smashing. Like whatever the baseball was in Futurama.
Oh yeah, like... Blurred's ball. Blurred. Next we're gonna add multi-balls and a fucking tether on the thing that makes it ping pong around the field. It'll be great.
What do we want, Rob? Dingers.
Dingers. More dingers. I'm sending in more trains, more dingers. Anyway, Rene Rivera profiting from a juice ball.
Yeah, do you want to tell us a little bit about Rivera?
I mean, we all know who Rivera is. He's a defensive. He's not a good hitter. I think we all know that. He's a defensive specialist. He's a really great framer. I'm surprised he doesn't have a major league job, if I'm being honest. Like, he seems like the ideal type of backup catcher that you want as a defensive specialist, or like tutoring a young guy on how to be a major league catcher who can occasionally run into one off the bench. He's seen time with the Padres, Rays, Mets, Angels. He's been around a lot. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't hate if Nitto continues to struggle. I don't think replacing him with Rivera would even be that awful. I don't think going into a season with Rene Rivera as your backup catcher is a bad idea. But
yeah,
I mean, good for him bashing in AAA. Maybe he just likes being an elite hitter.
I always thought that that must just be fun, you know.
Yeah, you ever hear the story about like Billy Butler going to beer league softball after he retired and just destroying people because.
It was like last summer we had like a bunch of conversations in Slack when Pete Alonso was just hitting the crap out of the ball during August for Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. It was just like, you know, everybody thought he was bored. He would get bored with it. And I was just like, that just sounds like a blast, like hitting 450 feet bombs in the desert. Like
competitors, I think, always want a challenge, but I imagine, like, well, as someone who played sports myself, sometimes it's nice just to have to feel like the best person on the field for a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly. I am better than everyone else here. This is pretty cool.
Just doing like absurd things, like hitting baseballs like into the next building.
Right. So good for you, Renee. I hope you get a major league job next year.
Yeah. And I think it's possible that he might be an upgrade over Nitto. Mm-hmm. I think the defense, Nito's probably a better defender at this point, just considering his age and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But if Rivera is closer to the 90 WRC plus that he had last year,
mm-hmm. That might even be a good starter given the catcher escape these days. Like, catcher is bad.
Is really, really bad. So if you're not taking a huge defensive hit and you don't have to play a guy who... What was Tomas Nito's line coming into today?
Tomas Nitto has a bad DRC plus. Let's just go with that.
Yeah, no. 42. That's rough.
Ugh.
All right. Cannot say enough good things about his defense, though.
Yeah. Another guy I like to watch, but who just can't hit. You can't roster. DRC has him at 60.
It's very difficult to roster that guy.
And roster two of them, basically.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, keep hitting dongs, Rivera. It's fun.
I'm sure we'll see you in September. That's usually one of the call-ups is,
third catcher.
All right. So Drew Gagneau was our pitcher of the week. On August 8th, he had a perfect game going into the eighth inning. Through eight innings, allowed one hit, no walks, and struck out five. So, pretty great day. I don't know.
I mean, we all know, it's similar to Rivera, we all know who Gagneau is at this point.
Yep.
That's pretty great that you can do that in AAA.
He might just be like a very good AAA starter. Like,
I don't think he was...
Some guys just like max out there, you know?
Yeah. I don't think he's bad as like your eighth guy out of the bullpen. Like, it's fine.
No, he's definitely like a good guy to have in your shuttle, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. I could see him doing this for like another 2 years, maybe.
Absolutely.
Shuffling back and forth before either he moves on to a different team or, you know.
I think the Mets often neglect to hold on to this kind of depth. So, yeah, good for Gagneau. He's never going to throw a perfect game in the majors, but...
highly unlikely, yes.
Yeah.
He's been pretty good in AAA. His ERA is 215, I think.
Yep, 215, 431 FIP.
Which isn't even, like, that bad given the juiciness of the ball.
Juiciness of the ball. All right. I don't think I've ever heard it described that way, but all now juice. That's how it's the balls are now juicy, not juiced. It has been decreed.
Hashtag juicy balls.
Juice. Oh.
Oh no.
God damn it.
I wish I didn't do that.
Well, too late now. You've spoken it into existence. Yeah, I'm sure we'll see Drew back in September. Unfortunately, I'm more worried that he's going to be like in line for the fifth starter spot going into next season if they lose Wheeler, but that's a depressing discussion for another time. Let's not worry about that.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that things will have gone very poorly this offseason if that's the case, but yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he was in the opening day bullpen.
Yeah, I could buy that. And again, it's an eighth man, mop up, whatever guy. Like, sometimes you just need to eat some innings, so.
Yep. All right. So, good job, Rene Rivera and Drew Gagneau. I guess we'll take a break and come back with a discussion on Ahmed Rosario, the prospect, in a little bit. So, back after this.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Amanda.
We get to tell everyone about the new pod, Eater's Digest.
Eater's Digest. That is right. Our brand new podcast. It is available now.
It's everything you need to know about the world of food every week with a little help from the biggest names in the industry and food journalists from the Eater Newsroom.
We're going to talk about everything from the worst things that diners do in restaurants to fake meat. We're going to talk about food delivery tech. We are going to argue a lot about how to best behave in restaurants.
Oh, yeah, big time. So many things. Food, I mean, there's politics. Nothing we can't touch.
Food and politics?
Food and politics, maybe. Yeah, yes, food and politics comes up.
Yep.
It might make you laugh. It might make you think. It might even make you hungry, Daniel.
So subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Ken Lavin. I'm joined here by Lucas Vlahos and... we're going to discuss Ahmed Rosario for the next little bit. Basically, Ahmed Rosario is having a pretty good second half so far.
That he is.
And Lucas and I are going to take a look back at Ahmed Rosario, the prospect, sort of what the book on him was prior to, you know, making it to the big leagues, what weaknesses were in his game, what strengths, and debate or discuss a little bit whether we think he's actually breaking out or, you know, what the deal is. So Lucas, you want to start?
Yeah, absolutely. So Ahmed as a prospect was always super athletic, very raw for a while. He had a really noisy swing. They eventually calmed it down. I guess I should do the history first, right? So he was a Dominican signing in the 2012 IFA period. At the time, it was a record bonus, $1.75 million. I'm pretty sure it's been surpassed.
Yeah, it's Mauricio was, I think, 2.1, and then
Alvarez got more. Yeah.
Alvarez was like 2.7 or something.
Yeah, yeah. So, but at the time, it was a record. This was at a time when Sandy usually didn't give out huge bonuses.
Yeah, I think the record before him was Wilmer Flores for like $700K or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Which is a defensible philosophy. Like, Sandy would focus on signing a bunch of the lower tier guys because DSL, Dominican scouting, is such a nebulous black box. But but Ahmed was a big time prospect. He was like the biggest one ever signed by the Sandy, I don't want to say regime, but front office up until that point.
Yeah, they've basically been spending on at least one dude every year since, a couple of exceptions. Mm-hmm. I think 2014, I don't know if they gave out $1 million to anybody.
That wasn't the year they missed on Vlad, was it?
No, that was 2015. They did pretty well in 2015.
Yeah, they did.
Really just Jimenez, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways, like the first of that group was the point.
Mm-hmm. So they put him on a very aggressive path. They sent him to Kingsport at 17, and he understandably struggled because he was 3.5 years younger than everyone he was facing. If you look back at some of our old reports, back when Jeff was still the only guy doing this, didn't love the swing, right? The swing is going to be a problem. I could see how it could generate some power, especially in BP, but the hand path is so bad that I can't see him consistently barreling balls in games. So that's a direct quote. And that was basically the book. Like, he had such a noisy hand path that even though he has a really quick bat in terms of actual wrist strength and athleticism, the mechanics of it were just horrific, and he was pretty overmatched. In 2014, he split time between the Cyclones and back then the Savannah Sandnats, just getting a taste at the end of the season. And things were a little bit better, but it was punchless, a little bit punchless, which, again, understandable given his age. He was 289, 337, 380 in Brooklyn. And then I'm not, like, the stats in seven games don't really mean much.
Don't really mean anything.
Yeah. It's
didn't whatever. Really do much at the end of the year.
But. Right. It's a long season.
Very young for the age. For.
Yeah. Playoff race, probably. So, yeah. Jeff still wasn't super enamored with him yet, but he pointed out that the swing was improving and he was sort of starting to translate some of the raw athletic shortstop skills into actual defense. The approach is still a problem, but still struggling with spin. I mean, this is like, you could copy paste this profile and it probably apply to like 80% of notable Dominican prospects,
like
really athletic
Dominican,
good,
you know,
right. Really athletic, good tools, somehow doesn't leverage it on defense, needs to rework his swing and can't recognize spin for shit.
Right.
Like, that's true of like every young prospect at this point. But the tools are there. 2015, he spent most of his season with St. Lucie and then got some time with Binghamton at the end of the season. But again, wasn't great for St. Lucie. He was 257, 307, 335, 10 games for Binghamton, so who cares again. And the book was basically the same. Aggressive hitter, swings a lot, bad approach. But at this level, he's still able to make a reasonable amount of contact, but just not enough to not as much as he was able to in Brooklyn, and the lack of strength was becoming more of a problem as guys started to just kind of knock the bat out of his hands almost. So 2016 is when things really changed. He was one of the Barwis success stories that hasn't yet blown out their shoulder and or back. Rest in peace.
Yeah, no, he's really good at like lower half stuff.
Right. It's football training, right? And running is running is running. And then the upper half stuff for football is entirely different from baseball. But so he worked out with Barwis. He came back a plus runner and just seemed to add strength, which probably helped him a lot, given how wiry he was.
Yeah, I remember like seeing him that spring training, and it was like, you know, he always looked like a kid in his uniform before then. And like that was the first year where you're like, holy shit.
This guy.
He showed up like a really like in amazing shape. He looked like basically filled out for like the first time.
It's that year when your wiry friend starts going to the gym with some meathead and puts on 40 pounds of muscle in 3 weeks. back to St. Lucie, where he mashed 309, 352, 422. Now that like looks really, I'll get into what I thought about this at the time later, but that's a big improvement, put it that way. So he went to Bingo, continued to be excellent, I mean, arguably even better for Bingo, 341, 392, 481 in a significant amount of plate appearances. It's 237 plate appearances in 54 games while being almost 5 years below the league average, 4.5 years below the league average. The scouting was still pretty much the same. This from Steve, he's always aggressive at the plate, mostly thanks to excellent hand-eye coordination and quick wrists, above average bat speed. So he's still does not have a refined approach, but and relying on his athletic tools to succeed. And looking like he's going to actualize on those tools.
Yeah, and like that, you know, the athleticism was going to let him get to, you know, any of the pitches he was swinging at, you know.
The approach was not going to be a problem because he was good enough to get to anything and had the hand-eye coordination to do so. You can imagine that a player like that would succeed fabulously at an environment with
basically like tailor Vegas. Made for the desert.
Right, quick infield balls that fly forever.
Babbitt's galore, like
it's perfect. And unsurprisingly, he destroyed AAA in 2017, 328, 367, 466, and then was promoted, where he struggled 248, 271, 394 in 46 games to close out the 2017 season. Now, the approach was a real problem there. 49 strikeouts, 3 walks. That's a 30% strikeout rate, basically, and only a 2% walk rate, which had previously never been a problem for Rosario, right? Like, he could get away with swinging at whatever he wanted because he'd make contact with it, and the things pitchers would eventually just have to throw him crap that even he knew how to lay off of. But suddenly you get to the major leagues and you can't hit that breaking ball.
Yeah, and all of a sudden they're able to, you know, paint the corners.
Right.
And
right. Or have a slider that moves an extra 3 inches that you need to know to lay off because you cannot reach it anymore. And suddenly, like, the flaws at this point, was he ranked the number one prospect already? I believe he was.
I think he was at the time of promotion.
Right. But this was what the book was. It's like, look, he has no approach. At the same time, he wasn't going to get any better in AAA because...
Yeah, you know, that was when they had to promote him. Like,
right.
He could continue to, you know, just beat the ball into the ground in Vegas and hit 330, but it's not going to do him any good. He needs to, at some point, you need to learn how to hit big league spin.
Right. It's the same point we made about K. You need to be challenged to point out your weaknesses and work on them.
Only the best of the best get to the big leagues.
Like, right. So in 2018, it wasn't quite as disastrous. It wasn't a 15-1 strikeout to walk ratio, but it still wasn't great. It was 256, 295, 381, and that's in 592 plate appearances. It's a 5% walk rate and a 20% strikeout rate. So he's not swinging as much crap. He's getting the bat on the ball a bit more, but there's no power.
Like, approaching what looks like what could be like a normal. Like,
right. But that's like, still, like, it's basically the downside of this
great,
sort of profile.
But it looks like something that could be a big leaguer's.
Right.
Yeah. Right. But yeah.
And the defense still wasn't good either, which is the other aspect
of
this game.
Yeah, the defense was supposed to sort of carry the profile, at least while he learned the finer points of hitting big league pitching. But, you know, as we've seen at times this year too, he's struggled defensively to the point where the Mets have talked about moving him to center field at some point in the future, which I think might end up happening regardless, just because of, you know, roster optimization and stuff. Like,
if
Jimenez ends up coming up with, and, you know, is that good of a defender at shortstop,
right.
You know, you might want to consider getting both him and Rosario into the lineup if Rosario was also hitting. But, you know, it's neither here nor there.
Well, let's debate. We could debate whether Jimenez is ever going to hit either, but that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, no, that's a whole other thing. I'm sure we'll do that at some point.
Right. So 2019 has been a tale of two halves for Rosario. So on the season, he's improved immensely. It's 279, 318, 441. That's league average offense. With a 330 BABIP, the peripherals are basically the same, 5.4% walk rate, 20% strikeout rate. The first half looked almost identical to 2018, 260, 299, 414. I mean, it's basically the same with perhaps a little bit more juiciness to the balls. It's an 88 weighted runs created plus, striking out 20% of the time, walking 5% of the time. The second half, which I think in the splits we were looking at, is from July or August 2nd onward, or...
Yeah, wait, I have it up.
July 2nd.
July 2nd to August 10th, so it's a little over a month.
Right. In that stretch, it's been 343, 380, 529. That's a 140 weighted. Now, there's a 376 BABIP there, but he's also walking only 5.6% of the time, but... He's only striking out 13% of the time, and the swinging strike rate has gone from 12.9 to 9.4, so from below average to well above average. Which leads to the question, breakout or nah? Reading directly from the notes here, people.
Yep.
Breakout or nah?
I prefer nah. You got to really hear the H.
Nah. All right.
Fantastic radio.
So I believe I've been the bear on Rosario since like 2015. I believe I'm still the bear on Rosario. So maybe you want to go first and say why you believe this is real.
So I don't know if I fully believe it's real, but I think if he was really breaking out, it would look a lot like this. Basically, mm-hmm. he is not swinging and missing as much. Whether that's a function of just, you know, him getting a random 100 plate appearances where guys aren't really executing the slider off the plate away as much. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't really say, but if he was breaking out, I think this is what it would look like. Like, we saw a similar thing with Nimmo. I think he went similarly from like 11% to like 9% in 2018 or 2017 when he kind of broke out, mm-hmm. or showed that he was kind of like intriguing enough that he should be in the Mets' plans. But yeah, it's like he's just putting the bat on the ball a lot more. And when you do that, good things tend to happen, especially with his speed. So I don't know if it, you know, is actually happening, but if it were going to happen, it would look like this, basically, it sums up my opinion.
So I'm like, look, this is if I was building like my idealized prospect or thinking about the prospect profile I like the most, mm-hmm. it's the opposite of Ahmed Rosario. I really, really dislike this whole profile of toolsy guy who has good bat to ball, but a bad approach and no power because his approach is so bad. Like
there's a lot of things you need to teach there.
Yeah.
Very difficult to teach.
And I think that profile gets consistently overvalued because scouting types see the tools, and it's really easy to dream on this. It's like, oh, you teach him to lay out that slider and suddenly he's got super athleticism, a really fast bat, and he's an elite shortstop with power in it. And like when it hits, sure, it's a superstar, but I think training these things is really, really hard, and I don't think people's internal heuristic of how often these things get trained is accurate. Like more often than not, these guys just are what they are and don't improve in these areas.
Yeah, a high percentage of these guys end up like Alcides Escobar.
Right, exactly. And
playable for a few years, but you know.
And to Jeff's credit, that's what he always said the downside on.
That's why I said Ahmed. It.
Right. Ahmed's downside was always Alcides Escobar. And like the good Alcides Escobar seasons, yeah. Not 53 weighted run created plus.
Like playable for a little while, you know?
Right. And Ahmed is like playable. He's fine. Like he's a guy. As to this breakout, I'm gonna look at the plate discipline. I'm gonna look at the power, and I don't see that either of them have really changed. So I know he's striking out a lot less, but it's not because he's swinging less. He's swinging outside the zone even more, actually. It's gone up by 2%, which is pretty inconsequential.
Yeah, he's just making a lot more contact.
Right. He's swinging less in the zone, so it seems like, if anything, his pitch selection is slightly worse. The positive change is his contact rate, which went from 74 to 82, and specifically from 83 to 94 in the zone. So that's one big change, and I'll get to the comps on that in a minute. But that's like the only significant change in his plate discipline number. That's what's driving the 10% strikeout rate cut. There's no improved selectivity. There's no additional walks. And it's only 119 plate appearances. Now strikeout rate has been said to stabilize around 100 plate appearances, but that number should probably be doubled. I don't know that this is a significant enough sample size for me to believe it, particularly given the competition he's faced. Like he's gotten to feast on Marlins.
They've come off a weak stretch, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll get to like why I don't believe that in a sec, but it's questionable. And then in terms of adding power, I looked at his batted ball mix. He's hitting more ground balls and pulling more, which is always a bad combination. If you're going to be a pull hitter, you need to get the ball in the air. The quality of contact is unchanged. He's not hitting the ball any harder. He's hitting fewer line drives, and his ISO is only improved marginally, something like 8 points or so. I can do math. That's 37. That's 39, or whatever. It's improved. It's improved marginally. It's basically the same. So there's no real changes in terms of the quality of the hits he's getting. It's still the same, not punchless, because he does have power and he does get the ball into the outfield, but it's not impressive punch. It's not something that you're writing home about. So the bottom line here is while his weighted runs created has improved by roughly 55, 60 points, in this window we're looking at, it's almost entirely driven by an 80-point BABIP swing and the lack of strikeouts. And if you like, if you want to believe that Ahmed went from a slightly below contact rate in the zone, which is where he was before this stretch, to being elite within the zone, like Joe Panic, Michael Brantley level elite at contact when you swing within the zone, if you believe he made that change and actualized it in a month, then sure, maybe this is real. That seems highly...
Yeah, a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, that seems highly, highly unlikely to me. And like, maybe some of it's real. Maybe it's a marginal improvement.
I don't think he's like... I don't think in either of our wildest dreams would he be like a 140, like 40%
no, average. Not. Yeah.
I could see him like settling in at like 110 for the rest of the year.
I don't even know that I see that, honestly. Like, I think I see him settling.
The difficult thing too is like, since he really doesn't walk at all, how high of an average is he going to hit for, you know?
Exactly. That's the whole point. Like, you need, like, if you want to break down hitting it to three skills, it's probably like bat to ball.
He's probably got to hit like 290. I don't know.
Right. There's no. He doesn't do there are three elements. You make a lot of contact, you walk a lot, and you hit for power. He doesn't do two of those things. He doesn't hit for a lot of power, and he doesn't walk a lot, which means the entire pressure is on him to make stupid amounts of contact. And I don't know that, like, I'm no swing expert or anything, but I don't see any drastic changes he's made that would make him an elite contact hitter all of a sudden. Like, I don't understand where that would come from. And I certainly don't believe it after 120 plate appearances. Now, if you wanted to argue that instead of a 10% bump, it's a 5% bump, like, all right, fine. He'll settle in as a 95 weighted runs created plus hitter once the BABIP progresses, or maybe 100, which is fine again, but it feels disappointing. Right, because he was number one overall prospect, you dream about what that should be, and this isn't a super exciting player.
Yeah, all fair.
I mean, I've always been the bear on him.
No, yeah, and like, again, like, you know, overreact to slight improvements. Basically, people want to see what they want to see in Ahmed.
Oh, of course. Of course.
It's just the nature of projection, you know? Mm-hmm. It's subjective. Everybody, you know, you want to dream on this guy. It's kind of a mixed bag, I think. Like, there are some things that have been legitimately better. I don't know if any of them are really sticky. But there are also the same things, you know, BABIP luck for a month.
Right. This could just be random BABIP noise and getting some nice juicy garbage in the middle of the plate because he was playing the White Sox Pirates
I mean, he's also 23 and, you know.
Right, that's the other end of it, right?
You're totally
right.
Some guys, you know. But yeah, you know. So, mixed bag.
Look, it'd be a lot more easy to believe if we saw improvement in his obvious flaws. Right, like if you saw him laying, if you saw the O swing go down, or you saw the ISO go up, or the hard contact increase, but that's not what has driven this improvement.
Yep. What do you make of the defense?
I think the defense is legitimately better.
I've always thought that he looks like he last year, and I guess for part of this season. Although I don't know, I think just when things get bad. Mm-hmm. I think generally when things are bad, like around the team, I think it's easy for things to go really bad individually, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
So I don't know if I put like a ton of stock in him having like just a really bad week or bad couple of weeks with the glove, making like easy errors. That always seems to me like a game speed thing when you've got mm-hmm. a guy who sometimes makes like really good plays and has all the tools and everything to make really good plays, and then, you know, sometimes he just boots routine ground balls that like every shortstop should make.
Right. I think too often, especially for Latino players, people say it's like a focus issue or something.
Yeah, no, I think it's just big league games move really fast. Like,
sure, you know? I think he just needs more practice. Like the I have a much easier time buying into the ability of players to improve their defense drastically.
Yeah, I mean we've seen it, you know, with a bunch of guys. Right. You can coach defense to a degree. And a lot of it is noise anyway, based on positioning and, you know.
And the Mets certainly do not have good positioning.
Yeah, so I don't know if you can even really ding him that much.
Like, he has the tools, right? And defense is just – defense, unlike hitting, is not just a – is much less mental. There's no neurology. There's no eye element. There's no that side of the game isn't as important on defense. It's physical. And if Max Muncy can train himself into being a serviceable second baseman and an above-average third baseman. Yeah,
literally anything's possible.
Right. Ahmed Rosario can and I think will become a decent shortstop at some point, unless his hands are just worse than – which I don't think they are.
Yeah, and in which case, I think he is. It's the same thing that we're saying about him with shortstop. It's like he has everything you would need to be a good outfielder, and I think the hands would matter less. You know, tracking down fly balls than they would on the ground.
Hey, just have like Juan Lagares run a switching from shortstop to center field camp
Well, the guy he taught Juan was Luis Rojas, and he's in the clubhouse now.
Perfect, so. Right? Perfect. Like, and like he has this, like he has a good arm.
Honestly, given our little tangent earlier about Andrés Giménez, I don't even know if it'll end up being an issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know. There's every chance that Giménez doesn't hit enough to be, you know,
right.
A regular or the guy you're comfortable starting.
Right.
And then in which case Ahmed's, you know, roughly league average plus or minus 10 points in either direction.
He's a fine short. He's fine. Like he's not, I don't think if this improvement is him becoming a better complementary piece. Great. I just don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think I've
seen like superstar upside in him in many years.
Nope. Yeah. I think we're on the same page on that.
Yeah. Like
I just hope if the BABIP gods just smile on him for like another how many games are left in the season?
40.
Yeah. It just keep whatever sacrifices you're making to the BABIP gods, Ahmed. Just keep doing that for another 40 games, and we're all good.
Yeah, and like I think he could easily be like, I don't think his BABIP for the season is all that out of whack being around 330 at the moment. I think a player with his speed and with his ability to put the ball in play as much as he does.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there is some marginal change in that, you know, again, big if, small sample size, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like league average should be pretty simple for him then, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
If you're spraying, totally. You know. And if he's league average and playing a scratch shortstop, that's, you know,
that's better than most shortstops.
That's pretty close to a six, even if it's not a particularly exciting six, right?
Right. I mean, just like catcher, people overestimate the quality of shortstops because it drops off pretty, like there's a bunch
of elite ones, but,
and then there's
no middle tier, like
Freddie Galvis.
Yep.
Oh, I guess he's been replaced by Bo Bichette. Well, this is exactly the problem, right? You can't name any of these other shortstops.
I'll look it up.
Who's like a good example for this?
Let's see. Fangraphs.com. Yeah, so there's like the elite tier, and then there's a bunch of two-win guys. Like, Gene Segura is a good example. He's a league average hitter, pretty good defender, 2.3 WAR. Dansby Swanson, similar. 103 WRC plus, basically 2 WAR.
Yeah, if that's what Ahmed is, that's fine.
Yeah, if he'd be like somewhere in the 10 to 15 range in the league, mm-hmm. that's like a starter, you know, not a particularly exciting starter, but that's a legitimate starter.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Yep.
We all wanted. All right, we wanted Machado, but we get.
Yeah, we get out. It's fine.
You get.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows, man. Like we've said, he's got all the tools you could ever want. Maybe it coalesces.
Uh huh. And he's only 23.
He's only 23. I think there might be a little more pop.
I could buy that.
But you know, it's always going to be more doubles power. I don't know. It's also somebody I think the juice ball would probably help.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
I'd be interested to see if they made more swing changes.
I honestly think they've tried so many things with him. They just kind of have to let him hit.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair.
They've tried so many things. How many Steve Gelb's reports have we seen of Ahmed is now doing a leg kick? Ahmed is now back to a toe tap. Ahmed is now back to the original leg kick.
It's very Byron Buxton almost.
We have this great prospect with all these tools who, you know, has taken a little while and, you know, a lot of the sheen is worn off and a lot of people, I don't know, there's been a lot of hand wringing for explanations, I guess.
Right. Right.
All right. I guess we'll take another break and then we'll visit a prospect from yesteryear in Oh Yeah, That Guy. So back after this.
Hey, I'm Neil Patel, editor-in-chief of The Verge, host of The Vergecast. We've been revamping The Vergecast more and more lately, and we're coming out with episodes twice a week, sometimes even a third bonus episode. On Tuesdays, I talk to influential people around the world of tech, like Microsoft founder Bill Gates and other tech execs like the founder of Lime Scooters, the CEO of Beyond Meat. We've also been talking to a lot of reporters and academics about the major pressing policy issues in tech, like Facebook's content moderation, they're not doing great, YouTube's harassment plan, or lack thereof, and whether or not the government should break up Amazon, which... maybe it should. And then every Friday, I sit down with executive editor Dieter Bone and Paul Miller for our chat show. We cover the latest in tech news and product reviews. We bring in our other reporters from around The Verge. That show is a party. You should listen to it. You can hear all that and more if you subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'd love for you to listen and join us. So again, subscribe to The Vergecast wherever you get your podcast. We'll see you there.
Hello, listener. I'm Sean Ramos-Firm, host of Today Explained, Vox's daily news podcast. Every day, Monday through Friday, my team and I look at what's happening in the world. We pick one essential news story that defines our moment and ask smart people to help us understand it in about 20 minutes or less. It's the perfect way to start or end your day. Subscribe to Today Explained for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app. It's from Stitcher and the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, it's Steve, and I was unable to join Lucas and Kenny this week because I'm down in Jim Cornette country. I'm down in Tennessee to see the Kingsport Mets. So the trip down here gave me plenty of time to think, and one guy that had a great week in 2012 that I completely forgot existed was Alonzo Harris. From August 4th to August 11th, he hit .517, .563, .793 with three doubles, a triple, a home run, three stolen bases, and was just basically an outright force for the St. Lucie Mets that week. He was born in Macomb, Mississippi, and is one of three players to be drafted out of Macomb High School, along with Adrian Brown and Gerard Dyson. He was a two-sport star there. He excelled in football and baseball. As a quarterback, he averaged about 250 rushing yards and 250 passing yards in his senior year. And then on the baseball diamond, he hit .540 with 11 doubles, 3 triples, and 11 home runs, and 30 stolen bases. Obviously, with numbers like that, he is getting scouted by colleges with big-time programs, baseball programs and football programs. And in the end, he chose baseball. He committed to Southwest Mississippi Community College and was going to play baseball there. The Mets drafted him in the 39th round of the 2007 draft. He was the 1,190th player to be selected overall, and he forewent his commitment to go to college to sign with the Mets. He signed late, so he ended up not actually playing at all in 2007, but he made his debut in 2008, and he really killed it. He hit .308, .379, .510. In 33 games for the GCL Mets, and he hit 5 homers, and he stole 7 bases. He spent most of the next year, 2009, with Kingsport, and he was pretty much just as good there. He hit .273, .321, .447 in 58 games, with 10 home runs and 15 stolen bases. He got promoted to Savannah Sad Nats, in 2010, and he struggled. He spent a couple of games there at the end of the 2009 season, and he didn't look good, but it was only a handful of games, so whatever. But the shine really came off in 2010, when he hit .224, .270, .342 in 105 games that year. Though he did steal 18 bases, so that was good. But the Mets left him there in 2011, and he did a little bit better the second time around. He hit 270, 329, 358 with 15 stolen bases, 109 games. They promoted him to St. Lucie in 2012, and you'd think based on his struggles in low A that there'd be a pretty long adjustment period. Surprisingly, though, he actually thrived against the tougher competition in the Florida State League. He played in 116 games that year, and he hit 287, 354, 424 with 8 homers and a whopping 40 stolen bases. I'll quote our former minor league editor Rob Castellano here. Harris, quote-unquote, had prospect stock that was on life support, but after his performance that year, he got a reprieve, and we ranked him 50 on Amazing Ave News' top 50 prospect list for 2012, which, as an aside, is crazy, and it's a number that we're never, ever going to do as long as I'm in charge here. He got promoted to Binghamton in 2013, and like a lot of other players, the jump to Double-A just proved too much for Harris. In 101 games for the B-Mets, he hit 218, 285, 305, though he did still have his legs and he did steal 25 bases. But the Mets cut him at the beginning of the 2014 season, and the Marlins picked him up a few days later, but he didn't really last long there. They signed him to the Jupiter Hammerheads, which is their high-A affiliate in the Florida State League, the same place where he had so much success in 2012. But this time, he only managed 3 hits in 11 games before the Marlins had enough and cut him. He wasn't done with baseball, though, and over the next couple of years, he played a bunch of baseball with independent teams. For the rest of the 2014 season, he was with the New Jersey Jackals of the Can-Am Association. In 2015 and 2016, he played with the St. Paul Saints in the American Association. And in 2017 and 18, he was with the York Revolution in the Atlantic League. And he wasn't really just kind of like an older player scraping by, not wanting to let the dream go. He was actually really good in the Indies. He was Baseball America's Independent League's Player of the Year in 2017. He hit 315, 381, 530 that year with 23 home runs and 31 stolen bases. Believe it or not, he's actually only 30 years old. And the numbers that he's putting up this year with the Guerreros de Oaxaca in the Mexican League are insane. Now, a little context. The Mexican League is using the new MLB juiced ball, and the elevations there that the teams play in basically put the PCL to shame. So it's like the perfect storm of insane offense. The league average is 303, 374, 477. So, yeah. But believe it or not, 2019, Harris is currently hitting 332, 423, 694 with 35 home runs and 41 stolen bases. Yep. So, an interesting anecdote. But when he was signed, the Mets regional scout, James Covington, said that Alonzo Harris had, quote-unquote, Alfonso Soriano-type tools. Now, Harris is definitely going to have a 40-40 season in the Mexican League. And Alfonso Soriano was the last major leaguer to have a 40-40 season. So I guess time is a flat circle, and the circle is now complete.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I'm Ken Lavin. I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos. And this is Oh Yeah, That Guy. Lucas, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, Oh Yeah, that segment where I close all my tabs all the time. Oh, wait, I didn't. Hooray. It's a better week than usual.
Yep, first time ever.
Yeah, it's really the worst.
I do that literally every episode.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to just open up Fangraphs here and search. Oh, that was my Oh Yeah, That Guy tab.
Yeah, no, I wasn't just, that wasn't just open for no reason.
So this week's is Kyle Allen. Allen was a pitcher taken the 24th round of the 2008 draft, 22, pick 734 overall. And during this week in 2009, he made a pair of starts, went 9 innings, had a 2.89 ERA, and struck out 8. This was at single A at the time, which would be That's still Savannah at that point, I believe. So let's go with that. Let's go with Savannah at that time. So Allen was a righty pitcher. Spent some time in his draft year in rookie ball, which is where he was the best in his career as a college guy. He was striking out almost 12 per 9 innings in 34 innings. Came to 2009 with a little bit of helium, like he was getting noticed from a couple of the online prospect outlets, and pitched reasonably well at single A, 8 strikeouts per 9 innings. Walked an oddly high number of guys, four walks per 9, and that's in 125 innings. But he put up a 3.35 ERA with a 4.02 FIP, which is fine. Like, it wasn't super exciting, but it was fine. At this point, he was getting some significant sleeper hype. In particular, minor league ball had him noted as a guy to watch, whose rankings, it was John Sickles who expected him to shoot up the ranks a little bit. He had him as a B-minus, seventh in the system, sandwiched in between our good friend Reese Havens and then Juris Familiar right below him. It's always fun to go back through these lists and see where everyone wound up. So Allen was getting some hype going into 2010, and then he had a back injury that just really derailed him for much of that season. Never quite got over it, was fighting through it for a while. We actually have an old interview on the site from Rob Castellano with Kyle Allen, where he talks about how it couldn't quite get his leg right because of the back injury, and it just kind of derailed his whole season. And he never really capitalized on the prospect hype after that. Who knows if the back injury was lingering or if it caused other issues, because back injuries can definitely do that. So in 2010, he was in advanced A and struggled. Went back there for 2011 and struggled even more with an ERA in the sixes and walking 5 guys per 9 innings. He went back a third time in 2012, mostly as a reliever, and was better. Got the walks under control, but still had an ERA over 4. And after that season, the Mets released him. Went into independent ball for a couple years for the American Association, so City in 2014, and then the Frontier League for Rockford in 2015. But only put up 47 innings there in independent ball before calling it quits eventually and moving on. Interestingly, he was actually born in Portugal. I don't know how many Portuguese players actually get drafted into major league organizations. I'm not sure there's ever been a Portuguese-born player in the majors. So that would have been an interesting goal if he reached it, but he topped out in advanced A and then moved on to greener pastures.
Yeah.
I had no idea. The name did not ring any bells for me.
Yeah, same.
This just sounds like the most generic white guy name ever.
It is two first names, yes.
Yeah. I also misspoke earlier. He was not a college pick. He was picked as a high school righty in the 22nd round. So the draft was very different back then. I don't think there wasn't as much salary manipulation. So the Mets probably drafted him as a guy they thought was a legitimate good prep pitcher. And I guess it just never worked out like it does for most prep pitchers, unfortunately.
You take 5 or 6 of them in every draft, and hopefully one works, you know?
You just put them all, they'll make a heap. Someone will get that Futurama reference.
I think it was Paul DePodesta in Moneyball who said that he drafts them in bulk in the later rounds.
It makes sense, right? Like,
take the riskiest, the riskiest profile and spread the risk around, you know?
Yep. Basic investment tenet. Then this is how you get the Big Short, but that's a whole different podcast as well. Did we tell people where Steve was this week? Or
Steve is heading.
He's
down.
He's dead. He's gone. You're stuck with us forever now.
Oh no. Okay, that's cruel.
No, spare listeners, you're stuck with Ken and I forever.
Oh no. Who wants to listen to that? Steve's driving down to Tennessee, I believe. I think West Virginia first and then Tennessee to check out the Kingsport Mets of the Appalachian League. So hopefully he'll have plenty of notes in the near future on Brett Batty, Francisco Alvarez, Astudillo the Younger.
Astudillo the Younger, who does not look like Astudillo the Older, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Hopes deleted.
Had a pretty great week last week. I think
he did.
Dunks, yeah.
Batty's been struggling a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say he's a little rawer than anticipated, you know. But again, post-draft year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not going to hold that against him. I want to see what he does next year.
My thoughts on Francisco Alvarez are very well known on this podcast.
We're going to like rake. You're going to put Francisco Alvarez at like 2 on the list next year, and it's going to be entertaining.
So, like, I get the. We'll talk about it with Steve, but like, I get the risks there. I just like look at the bat, and it's like.
Catchers are weird, man.
Catchers are extremely weird.
And he's not even like a tall catcher who would work.
He's not even a sure shot. Yeah, a sure shot catcher. Like, nobody knows if he can catch, but boy, can he hit.
Yeah, boy, he can. I wonder if he could hack it at third base. I don't know.
I don't think it's a given. I think it's definitely worth trying, I guess. But who knows? Hopefully he'll stick at catcher.
Yeah, that'd be ideal.
If Jorge Alfaro, I think Jeff said this in Slack, but if Jorge Alfaro and Gary Sanchez can get better as catchers, they both had like long, windy roads. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Gary Sanchez is somehow like an elite framer now.
Yeah.
For Baseball Prospectus metrics.
So. I think part of it is we just really don't know a lot about how like sticky framing numbers are.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
over time and between levels. I think that's really what it is.
Right, and he's young enough that they have lots of time to work on him with things. So work on things with him. Words.
I guess that it.
I think that's all we got.
These are always so much longer when Steve isn't here to.
Right, because you, he has, there's no one. There's no one to check our rants. Right. Let's do the rate, subscribe, and email us.
Yeah,
true, let's
true.
Get out of Dodge.
We have a normal ending. Yeah, so you can please, you know, rate and review the podcast on whatever Apple, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. We're From Complex to Queens. You can email the podcast at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. I'm Ken Lavin. You can find me on Twitter at KenLavin91. Lucas, what's your Twitter handle?
LVlahos343.
That's Lucas Vlahos. Steve is at Steve Sippa. Yeah.
Really thinking out of the box with that one, Steve.
Yep. yeah. Any final parting words?
Love the Mets. Love the Mets.
That sounds like as good a way as any to end the pod. So,
yep.
All right, we'll be back next week. Have a good one, everybody.
Are you troubled by strange hockey trades in the middle of the night?
Do you experience feelings of dread about NHL free agency?
Have you or your family ever seen a New York Islanders game?
If the answer is yes, then don't wait another minute. Pick up your mobile device and subscribe to Lighthouse Hockey Podcast from SB Nation today.
Our courteous and efficient hosts are ready to serve all of your Islander needs and worries.
Lighthouse Hockey Podcasts for New York Islanders fans.
Hi, I'm Amanda Clute, editor-in-chief of Eater.
And I am Daniel Janine, a producer here at Eater.
And we are here to tell you about our brand new podcast, Eater's Digest.
Every week on the show, we dive into the weirdest, funniest, and most important stories in the world of food.
With the inside scoop from the biggest names in the industry and expert insights from the Eater newsroom.
It's a really fun time, so I would say subscribe to Eater's Digest for free today on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.